WA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind of it?
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, Senator.
Ares 31, me neither.
Number 71, Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
Number 71, Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Something. A UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Emergency 1095. Yeah, something just passed over us. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy?
Yeah.
Did we just call about some UFOs? They're out there. Same airplanes.
At a dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, Bob, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. I really appreciate you listening and for all your support of the podcast from all over the world in the form of messages, comments, and emails. It is my opinion that the best information comes from people that have experienced firsthand, and I hope greater understanding can come from these witness accounts. So keep those emails coming in with your encounters. Now, back to the show. Our guest on tonight's episode is Kevin Estrella from Ontario and the instrumental rock band Pyramids on Mars. He is an experiencer and has been a guest on over 40 radio shows. And he's going to share his encounter with a interdimensional craft back in 2015 and his connection with Sandia Wisdom that reside under the Sandia Mountains of Albuquerque, New Mexico. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Well, thank you for having me.
If you'd like to start from the beginning, Kevin, and then work your way up to where you are today, please.
Well, good evening. My name's Kevin Estrella from the instrumental rock band Pyramids on Mars. I live in Hamilton, Ontario, here in Canada. My story is quite long and quite incredible. There's a lot of pieces to it, and it continues to this very day in regards to my music, but it's also its connections to my extraterrestrial mission here on this planet through what we would call it pre-birth contracts. Things that you finally reverse engineer your life and discover, oh yes, what I always thought I was supposed to be doing, that is actually what I'm supposed to be doing. And my understandings of quantum mechanics, of how the universe works, the physical universe, and our concept of time, these paradigms have completely been shattered for me, for things that have happened to me, and been able to reverse engineer my life to understand exactly why things occurred, why they did, and how they happened, and where things are going. But you know, my story starts actually at an early age, even when I was 3 years old. And my favorite TV shows at that time, back in the 70s, were watching original Star Trek series, and there was Space 1999, which is Moon Base Alpha. And then there was, Lost in Space. And I always felt like space was actually where I came from. It wasn't if I wanted to be an astronaut. It's like, I just feel like space was home. And I remember turning to my mom one day and saying, Mom, I want to go to the stars. I want to go to the moon. And she said, oh, that's so cute. You want to be an astronaut. And I'm thinking, no, that's not what I meant. Is that what I meant? I guess that's what this planet's supposed to be like. So even at a young age, I just had this strange concept of feeling kind of out of place a little bit. But, fast forwarding, in the future, I really started to take my, UFO studies very seriously when I got into university. And that was back in the 90s. And there was a guy downstairs who was one of the very first people who actually had internet. And you have to understand, nobody had internet, at least until the year 2000. But this guy was like 1992, and he actually had internet, and he was downloading this stuff from Bob Lazar and from Area 51 and reverse engineered ET UFO stuff. And I was just absolutely fascinated by it. And then I started reading Bud Hopkins' books on extraterrestrial abductions. And then, you know, the movie Communion came out, and that was really a huge influence on me. And I spent years studying extraterrestrials, you know, everything I could pull up, everything on the internet, crop circles, you know, everything, moon anomalies, Richard Hoagland stuff on Mars. I was, you know, alien bases on the moon, everything. I was just learning as much as I could to try and understand our place in the universe and how extraterrestrials have always been here. Obsession. I don't know if it was an obsession. I just felt like it was a mission calling, but this actually all ties in together as well in regards to my music. I'm an instrumental guitar player. My style of music is very similar to Joe Satriani, who is an instrumental rock player. He's taught Steve Vai, and you know, he's one of the top known instrumental rock players on the planet. And I was very influenced by his music, and I spent, you know, all my time in high school to woodshed as hard as I could and practice as hard as I could, so one day I could be able to write instrumental music like him. And that opportunity started to come. That opportunity came in the year 2011. And I started writing all this music, and I built my own studio at home and started, you know, writing this concept album, you know, my first album, Pyramids on Mars. And at the time, I created the name Pyramids on Mars because I wanted to tie my love of instrumental rock with also my passion for, you know, and mission trying to raise awareness of the extraterrestrial presence here on Earth and the anomalies in our galaxy and just the, you know, the extraterrestrial presence and raise awareness and raise consciousness. And little did I know that this actually was always the plan. It was always the plan, because as of October 21st, 2014, shortly when I was working on my second CD, Echo Cosmic, I stepped out onto my deck, and from on my neighbor's side, you have to understand, I live in the city of Hamilton, which is a city of 500,000 people. I live just off of one of the busiest streets in the city, which is Upper James. So I live right in the suburbs, right in the middle of a very busy subdivision. And so then from on my right-hand side, from my neighbor, this object started to come out from behind the tree. And at first, I thought it was a meteor because it was orangish-red, glowing. Just glowing, not like really bright, but just kind of glowing like coals, like amber coals. And it seemed to be covered in like smoke that was coming off the top of it and along the bottom of the streaming smoke that would come off and then kind of spiral up the back of it. And when it came into full view, it was a disc. It was a flying saucer. But at the time, I didn't know what I was looking at. And this thing was really close. It was like only 100 yards away from me. Like, really close. It was crazy close. And it must have been about maybe 40 or 50 feet in diameter. And it was maybe just a couple hundred feet off the ground in the middle of my subdivision. And I was just, I didn't know what I was looking at. Because the other thing with this thing that made it so strange was that it was two-dimensional. And so when people say, well, what do you mean by that? Well, it was like a solar eclipse. It was like a hole in the sky. So you picture a solar eclipse, you know, it's got height, it's got width, but it has no depth. It just looks like a hole in the sky. And that's what this object looked like. It just looked like it had no depth. It was just completely flat, like a hole in the sky. And it moved across just the distance of my backyard. And then it started to move south towards Bimbrook. And so its tail was moving away. And as it moved away, the plasma, like I realized actually it was 6 months later that I would realize that with the smoke streaming that seemed to be coming off the top of it and along the bottom of it, this was actually a plasma stream. This object was radiating plasma. It was covered in plasma. And then as it was moving away, the color of this object became darker and darker and denser to the point where it had absolutely no light. It was just a complete black object. And as it was simultaneously doing that, moving away, so I saw this, you know, the back of it. It was simultaneously opening up this, it was like a swirling vortex that was forming in the front of it, almost like a portal. And then it just went out of, I went out of my line of sight, and I was absolutely just freaked out. And I finally realized, I think I just saw a UFO. In fact, that was a UFO. And so I filed a report with MUFON, which is the Mutual UFO Network. And they have, you know, operations all throughout the world. They're the ones who do UFO investigations. But it would be almost a year later before I would actually get answers as to what occurred August 21st, 2014. But, you know, that being said, the object displayed physics that I had never seen before. And I'd seen UFOs in, you know, movies. I've seen them on YouTube. Nothing is even describable to what it was that I witnessed, because it displayed physics that I had never seen before. And for 2 weeks, I kept wrestling in my mind, trying to fit it into a box of what I could understand, what I could comprehend, thinking, was it some kind of military craft? Was it military? You know, but that didn't make sense. This thing was glowing red. It was flat. It was two-dimensional. It was radiating plasma. It was silent. It was only like 100 yards away. I could have thrown a rock at it. You know, it was like, what's going on here? What are the chances? You know, and there was all these other synchronicities that were taking place. Like, what are the chances of it appearing 7 seconds after I get on my deck? It's only like, you know, 700, you know, feet from me. It goes across the distance of my backyard only. Like, it was meant for me, like for me to see it, or it was waiting for me. Nothing. It was just crazy. So it would be almost a year later when it was announced in the papers of the Alien Cosmic Exhibition Conference in Brantford, which is the first alien conference in Ontario, where all these professional UFO researchers from all over North America were coming to talk at this thing. You know, Stanton Friedman was going to be there. And I was really excited because I had watched his videos for years. And then they were really talking about Grant Cameron from Winnipeg, who is a well-known UFO researcher. He's won several awards for his research. And then I saw what his presentation was on. And that's when my jaw just dropped. His presentation was on extraterrestrials and musicians, and how musicians are being contacted by extraterrestrials to raise consciousness and frequency on the planet. And I was just like, oh my God, this is about me. This is crazy. There's no doubt that this is all about me. I'm supposed to go and see him. I was just freaking out because I already knew what I was doing, you know, that I was already raising consciousness with my music. That was my intention with my music. And I always wanted to have a UFO contact, and all of a sudden they show up. I was just like, it's like, you know, when you're one of Jesus' disciples and you're called, and there's just no doubt, you know, no doubting in your mind. So I'm driving to this Alien Cosmic Expo thinking, oh my God, my life is going to change. I don't know what's going on here. It was the first synchronicity. It was the universe was guiding me. You were supposed to go and see Grant Cameron. I was just startled. And so when I get there, you know, I grab Grant just before he went on. Hand him my CD. He looks at it. He looks up at me and says, we got to talk. And I'm like, yeah, we got to talk. And then he goes on with his presentation talking about how many other musicians have been contacted by extraterrestrials. You know, the list is endless. We're talking about Elvis. You know, we're talking about John Lennon, David Bowie, all the members of the Moody Blues, Ace Frehley from Kiss. Rick Wakeman and John Anderson from the band Yes. The list goes on and on and on. The Foo Fighters, even like, you know, all these people who had extraterrestrial contacts. But then he started talking more about consciousness and music downloads, and how musicians seem to have this innate ability because they're so creative that they're able to shut down their left brain analytical side and be able to get music that seems to be coming from somewhere else. It's like the music is coming from the cosmos, and they don't even feel like they're writing the music. The music is just coming through. And he talked about how many songs came in dreams, or like seemed to be channeled, and just the song just was there. And I started to realize, you know, like that was like Led Zeppelin, you know, the song Kashmir was actually a complete download. Those lyrics, Robert Plant didn't even know what he was writing, and before he knew it, like, he looked down the paper, it was already written. And apparently he wrote it, but he doesn't remember writing it. It was just happening. Same thing with the song Stairway to Heaven. So the music seems a lot of messages are coming from extraterrestrials that are coming through music, but it's also just the music itself is coming from somewhere else. How many times the Beatles, some of their greatest hits were actually songs they heard in dreams. John Lennon was known for having a piece of paper next to him all the time. So when he'd wake up from a dream, he would write down the lyrics that were coming through. He just made this. But what was specific for me was that I too was experiencing the same phenomena of music coming through me, which I didn't even feel like I was writing it. My first CD, it felt like a color by numbers book where the song was just running itself. And, and the one means red, blue, two means blue, three means yellow. Oh, it's a picture of a dinosaur, and that's kind of like how I felt when I was writing my music. The song was just writing itself, but it went even further than that. I was getting songs in dreams that the song was in the dream and I never wrote it. For example, one of my songs, it's called Dream Division on Echo Cosmic. I didn't write that song. It came to me literally in a dream. And this phenomenon was written in Grant Cameron's book called Tuned In, The Paranormal World of Music. And what happened with this was that I had this dream where I'm watching TV. It's Joe Satriani. He's sitting at a recording console and he's being interviewed by some guy from MTV, the old, TV music video station. And the guy's talking to Joe and he says, "Yeah, man, I hear you're working on a new album. Can you play anything for us?" And Joe's like, "Oh yeah, we got, some bed tracks to this new song we're working on. Here, I'll play it for you." And then he starts fiddling with the knobs. And as the song starts coming in, it starts off with this clean guitar doing this strange time signature. And then the bass kicks in and then the drums kick in and all the instruments are doing something completely different. But when they all come together, it just worked beautifully. And then I thought, wow, this is an amazing song. I wish I could write something like this. And then it occurred to me, because this isn't like an lucid dream, I realized, wait a second, Joe never wrote this song. And I wake myself up, I go down to my studio, and I start tracking out all this stuff. And I tracked out the song, and within 3 days, boom, the song was written, produced, mastered, done. And I didn't write it. It came to me in a dream. As crazy as that sounds, it came to me in a dream. And I didn't rip it off, because it didn't exist. And there was no conscious effort at all of the creation of the song. It was like if you turned on the radio and you're listening to a song and it's really grooving and somebody turns to you and says, "Oh, by the way, that song doesn't exist. Here you go. It's yours. It's a gift." "Oh, geez, thanks, man." And that's how the song came. That is how it came. The same thing happened about a year ago as well. Another song. Then this is also written in Grant Cameron's book on Tuned In. And the same thing happened again. But the dream was a little bit different. I was in a Tool cover band, and maybe you might be familiar with the band Tool from the United States. And I was in this Tool cover band and I was looking at the album cover of us. And then it was supposed to be us playing like all these Tool covers. And I'm driving down this dirt road, listening to this really, really cool song. It was a new Tool song. And in the dream, I realized, wait a second, this song, I've never heard this song before. Tool never played this song. It's really cool sounding. And I realized, oh, geez, it's happening all over again. Wake myself up, run downstairs and start tracking the thing out again. There it is, another song that has popped up in a dream. So I didn't know what was going on here, but I was tapping into this other field of music. Now, I'm going to get a little bit into more about exactly what that is, because that's actually part two of my ET experiences. So here I am. I had this UFO contact, and when I talked to Grant, he basically, when I was at the Alien Cosmic Expo, I ran into the guys at MUFON who actually did the investigation on my UFO sighting. I walk up to them and they say, "Oh my God, I'm so glad you're here. We're doing a presentation on you." And I'm like, "What? A presentation on me?" And he says, "Yes, your case is actually one of the most authentic cases we've come across." I'm like, "Really?" He said, "Yeah. Can you go over again what the object looked like when it was moving away from you?" I said, "Yeah, well, like it was you know, it was covered in plasma, and then as it was moving away, the object became darker and darker and darker to the point where it had no light. And he just went like that. He clicked his fingers and he said, that was it. He said, you have to understand that any object that's radiating plasma, you can see the plasma from certain angles, but if you turn the object another way, that plasma stream disappears. We realized, because we tracked all the anomalies in the area that night, there were no meteors, there was no, showers or anything like that. You actually saw an unidentified flying object. Now your sighting was authentic. And I was like, oh my God, that's incredible. And I asked, well, how many other people saw it? There must have been tons of reports. I mean, this thing was only a couple hundred feet off the ground in the middle of Hamilton, which is one of the largest cities in Ontario. And he said, well, that's the thing. Nobody else reported it and nobody else saw it. And then I'm like thinking, that's impossible. There's absolutely no way that I'm the only one who saw this thing. There's no way. It's impossible. There's no way. This thing was huge. It was in the city of Hamilton. There must have been somebody else who saw it. And I walked away from there freaking out. I was scared. I honestly was scared. I didn't know what was going on. And so I called Grant because he gave me his phone number. And he said, yeah, I saw MUFON's presentation on your sighting. Yeah, don't worry. We'll talk about it. We'll go and get a coffee. And so, I meet up with him. We go and sit down and have a coffee. And I go through the entire thing all over again of what my sighting looked like and how it appeared and how it just seemed all these crazy synchronicities, like it showing up 7 seconds after I, got on my deck and it moved across my backyard and moved away. And then Grant says, the fact that you're the only person who saw the UFO and nobody else did. Yeah, that happens all the time. And I was just like, what do you mean it happens all the time? And he said, yeah, like, one person have UFO contact and nobody else. It happens all the time. Same thing happened to John Lennon in New York City. He's standing naked on his deck, and his UFO is so close he could throw a brick at it. And he's screaming at all the neighbors everywhere, everybody around. And it seemed like the whole city was just shut right down and everything was silent and quiet. He said, it's the Oz effect. I'm like, what do you mean the Oz effect? He says, these extraterrestrials have the ability of being able to shut people down and have contact with only the people that they want to have contact with. And that's why you were the only one who had contact with the craft. Kev, they're in direct contact with you. And I was just like, oh my God. I was just freaking out. I was just like, this is amazing. This is absolutely crazy. And it was at that moment when I realized that my life would never be the same. Never be the same. And then after that meeting with Grant, there was all these synchronicities that started to take place. You start to meet people, as Grant put it, it's like the ETs move you around like a chess piece, and you end up meeting people that you're supposed to meet along the way to have, that you're supposed to talk to. Synchronicities begin to build up, and the synchronicities continued, and they were just synchronicity after synchronicity of all this crazy, amazing stuff started to happen. And I was paying attention now to the universe, realizing that's how the universe communicates to you. Because 3 months after I had this UFO contact, I would have this dream. And in this dream, there was these three Zetas, like people call them the Grays, the extraterrestrials with the big gray heads and the big black eyes. And three of them were holding my guitar, my Ibanez Joe Satriani guitar. But it had this engravement in the neck, which looked like a double helix. And I recognized that double helix in the neck because it's a crop circle that was formed in Wiltshire, England in 1997. It's an actual double helix. It's three-dimensional. And I recognized it, but here it is, engraved on my neck of my guitar. And they're handing my guitar back to me. And I actually woke up out of this lucid dream. I was actually reaching out across the bed to pick it, to hold this guitar. It was crazy. It was like something out of 2001: A Space Odyssey. And then 3 days after having this dream, I'm followed by Neck Illusions on Twitter. Neck Illusions are a company who have a patent on removable neck graphics for guitar. And I'm thinking, wait a second, what kind of sorcery is this? What are the chances? What are the chances of, me having this dream and all of a sudden I find a company who can actually make this happen. And so I get in touch with Mark, and I send him the picture of the crop circle from Wiltshire, England. And I said, can you make this on my guitar and, you know, make it, you know, like a, kind of like a emerald green, like I saw in my dream. And he said, and he said, absolutely. And not only that, they thought it was such an amazing design that they end up giving me an endorsement deal with Neck Illusions, and they now sell it as one of their signature artists series. So this now I have this symbol that's recognized on my guitar, this DNA double helix. And I thought this is really cool. But it even gets the synchronicities and the message gets even more profound and clearer, because at the same time that I, you know, was writing all this music and I was having these dream downloads, and this music was coming from somewhere else, and my music is at a much higher consciousness. I communicate my music at a very expressive emotional level, and only of the highest of my being. But also at the same time, when I was writing my first CD, I had a massive increase in extrasensory abilities of telepathy. And it was so pronounced that I basically finally admitted to myself, okay, I have telepathy, I have ESP. Because I'd be at work, and all of a sudden I'd be thinking of somebody, and the phone would ring, and it would be them. Or I would, you know, phone somebody in California, and they'd say, oh my God, I was just talking about you. What are the chances? And it was happening so often. It was just crazy. I didn't know, like, it was like, how am I able to do this? It just doesn't make sense. Well, the biggest one for me, as far as, you know, that sold me that I had some, that was tapping into some kind of special, you know, telepathic abilities, was August 10th of 2014. And I was doing dishes, and all of a sudden I saw, I had this vision in my mind. I saw Robin Williams, the comedian actor, dying. And it was so profound and so upsetting. It was, I saw the whole movie of the movie he had done, which is called Bicentennial Man, where he plays an android that lives for 250 years. And then he makes a decision that he wants to end his life because he's tired of outliving all his loved ones. And the last scene in the movie is him lying on bed. He's unplugging himself battery-wise, whatever. He's lying next to his dying wife, and he just has this sad smile on his face as the camera is slowly moving away and the life is leaving his body. And I saw that image burned in my mind, and I was so upset. I was seeing Robin Williams die, and I was just overcome with such sadness. I didn't know what was going on. And then it would be just a little bit over 24 hours later on the next day that it was announced that Robin Williams had taken his life. And then I was really saddened. All of a sudden, I just realized that I saw him dying the day before. And I just completely was just shocked. It's like, oh my God, I saw him dying. I witnessed it. I experienced it. I felt his sadness. I felt him crying out to the world in this great, you know, awful sadness and gloom. And I was so shocked. It's like, my God, I do have this telepathic ability. There's like clairvoyance or something like that. Now, what day did I say that happened? That was August 11th when that notification came. When was my UFO that showed up? August 21st, exactly 10 days after. So I know that there's a sequence to this. There is a message. It's all connected. It's all connected. It's all comes together. Here I am developing telepathy, and these, you know, this DNA double helix shows up now on my guitar. And then I meet a woman by the name of Solaris Blue Raven, and she interviews me on her show. And then I'm explaining my whole story to her. And then she says to me, well, it makes complete sense, Kevin, this DNA double helix on your guitar neck, it represents DNA activation. Because that is what you have been doing in your music. Look at your telepathy. Look at your music. How it raises people's consciousness when they listen to it. She says, you have been activating your DNA because I teach this stuff in my books. So I never even heard of the phrase DNA activation. It was new to me. And I would then spend, you know, another year after that meeting other people and understanding what DNA activation actually is. And it's a real thing. It occurs. It's scientifically, it's been proven you know, scientists have been able to activate DNA through frequencies, where they can play a certain frequency and turn a tadpole into a frog. Or they're able to play certain frequencies and other things happen. So DNA can be activated through frequency modulation. DNA activation can be activated in multiple ways. And this has been the process of what's been happening with me, but even at a more deeper level. So taking things a little bit more forward with my UFO sighting, I had another UFO sighting, which became quite amusing for me. I was doing a photo shoot on the east end of Toronto in the Scarborough Bluffs, and we took about 150 photographs, and then they were developed, and then my photographer sent them back to me, and then I just happened to notice in one of the photographs a strange anomaly. I am holding my guitar, and then right behind this hill is this little object, which looks like a spherical metallic ball, and it has a strange teardrop energy formation around it. And I zoom in on it, and I could tell that it was only a couple hundred feet behind me, and it was not a bird, it was not a plane, it was some kind of UFO, some kind of anomaly. I could tell by the size of it that it was probably had a diameter no wider than maybe 3 meters. So it was most likely an unmanned probe that was sent and showed up behind me. It only showed up in one photograph out of 150. It just popped up, boom, there, and then disappeared. So I was photobombed by a UFO. And that's on my Twitter page. So if you go to @pyramidsonmars_, you'll see that picture right there. I don't change it. You know, it tells a story. You know, ETs are in contact with me all the time. They know where I am all the time, and they're a part of my life. But they would become even more of a personal part of my life about 2 years ago. And what happened with this is I made a friend through a UFO support group that I joined through Misha Johnston. And you can find her on Facebook for anybody who's looking, who thinks they've had a UFO contact and has had alien encounters. You can find her at Starseed Awakening on Facebook. She holds weekly chat rooms for experiencers to talk about their experiences. It's a completely private forum so that you can, you know, she'll counsel you. But anyway, I met a new friend through that radio show. His name's Kale. And then he's telling me about how there's this group of extraterrestrials who are using Twitter. And I thought, this is absolutely amazing. Extraterrestrials actually using Twitter? He said, yes, they're @SandiaWisdom. And so I decided to check this out. And I went to @SandiaWisdom and started to follow it. And here it's, you look at it, it says, my name is Tilkum. I'm from the planet Pontel, fifth planet orbiting Zeta Reticuli. And we are here to prepare Earth for its official first contact and teach archaeoplanetography. And that was the statement. Now, it's not just Tilkum. Tilkum actually is the commander, but there was three others who as well are on Twitter doing tweeting, which their names are Teeny. That's a girl. It's a woman. There's Drudy. That's another woman. And then there's Radar, who's a guy, and he's their pilot. And so, either four of them might be on Twitter at, you know, a different time, talking with their followers. It's not actually them doing the actual physical tweeting. They actually have telepaths here on Earth. And that would be Sue Walker and Reverend White Otter. Now, you have to understand that the reason why they call it Sandia Wisdom is because they live in Albuquerque, New Mexico, under the Sandia Mountain Range. So there's a massive mountain range in Albuquerque, and 2 miles underneath that mountain range is a extraterrestrial base. It is one of three main hubs here on planet Earth, massive complex where multiple star nations work out of and reside. And it just happens to be that Tilkum, and his group This is where they live, and so they end up communicating and talking telepathically to Sue and Otter, and Sue and Otter slowly developed a relationship with them, and got to know that, you know, that Tilkum wasn't from around here, got to learn more about him and his culture, and then he asked if they could, you know, is it possible to have a Twitter account? It was more like a social experiment. And Sue thought, you know, why not? There's no laws against that. And so they started creating this Twitter account, and they've been communicating with people on Twitter ever since. And I work with Sue and Otter very, very closely, because I developed a personal relationship with the gang, with Teeny, with Jurity, with Radar. And I realized that it was the real deal. You know, an incident that happened with me when I realized, okay, you can't make this up. And how I knew that, you know, that it was real was because on my website, pyramidsonmars.com, I sell t-shirts. And I had this series of t-shirts called ET shirts. And I had I have a radio show, my own UFO radio talk show. And one of my guests, Robert Fullington, he drew these paintings of these extraterrestrials. And so then one day on Twitter, Radar pipes up and says, we've got to get you some better Zeta models for your t-shirts, because the ones in your t-shirts are just way too serious and way too scary looking. And I'm thinking, oh yeah? Well, I know four new models for my new t-shirt. Because you have to understand that not only were, Sue Walker, their telepath, doing the tweeting for them, but she's also a portrait artist. And she actually drew three portraits, or she drew portraits of each of, of Jurity, Tilkum, Radar, and Teeny. And so I said, I could take your four portraits and put them on a t-shirt. And this is going live on Twitter. It's the whole conversation's happening live on Twitter. And so Tilkum pipes up and says, yes, I would like you to make a t-shirt of us. I think it would be a wonderful idea. And I said, okay, that's fine. But here's the thing. I want you guys to come up with the caption for the t-shirt, because the t-shirt has to say something. And so I'm thinking, I wonder what would be a good title, you know, a good caption for a t-shirt with the four of them on it. And then I thought, oh my God, of course. Just a quotation saying, we're here, with an exclamation mark. Because I was thinking, that's perfect, because they are here. That'd be such a cool t-shirt. And I'm thinking, you know, I'll bet Radar is going to be the one who's going to think of the caption for the t-shirt. Keep in mind, this is all happening live on Twitter. A minute later, after I thought this, a tweet comes up from them. And it was Radar. And it was bracket, we're here, exclamation mark, with this big happy face. And it said Radar. And my jaw just dropped. I'm like, oh my God, that's absolutely amazing. That's exactly what I was thinking was going to be the title, which should be the title of the t-shirt. And then the response from Radar comes back, bracket, with utter look of shock, you mean gasp, telepathy works? Who knew? And then I tweet back, I said, wait a second, what do you mean? Did you just... And then the tweet comes back and says, you're easy to read and dude, get used to it. It was at that point that I was so excited, so enthralled, and so freaked out, thinking, oh my God, this is so real. There's no way. There's like absolutely no way. And you have to understand that you can actually write a whole PhD, thesis on this whole interaction which took place. Because there are multiple levels to it of understanding telepathy. First of all, I live in Hamilton, Ontario, which is about 2,000 miles away from Albuquerque. So he has no problem communicating with me 2,000 miles away telepathically to read my mind. Go figure that one out. Think about that one for a while. Secondly, I talked, you know, about a year later, I talked about this on Facebook with a couple friends, and I actually got a surprising response from somebody. And their response was, well, if they had read my mind telepathically, I would have found that to be the most vile intrusion of my personal privacy. I would never stand for it ever. anyone to read me like that, and it would be a complete violation of my personal, you know, rights. And then I was thinking, wait a second, that means that Radar already knew that about me, because I had no problem with him doing what he did live on Twitter. He wouldn't have violated my privacy unless he had read that deep inside me to know that it wouldn't have bothered me. Because if it would have bothered me, he would have never said anything. So that just goes to show you the depth of telepathy. It's not just your thoughts that they read, but they read all the way inside your soul in regards to your true feelings and your true emotions about how you feel about stuff. And that's why you have to understand is that telepathy is the only acceptable form of communication in the universe for us to learn. We need to develop our telepathy, because telepathy is communicated not just in words, it's communicated on an emotional wavelength. It's emotions, the emotion that's carried. It's your thoughts behind that. It's images that are carried. It's your intention. It's your deepest feelings communicated. You see, our communication as a human species is so hidden and so limited. So humans are so used to being able to deceive each other and purposely deceive. And that's what makes us such a primitive species. We're one of the most primitive species in the universes. We are so far behind because we think we can hide behind our lies. We can manipulate people, that our actions don't hurt other people, that as long as I'm winning, I'm going to stab you in the back and I win. Well, guess what? A telepathic nation, they already know your true intentions. There's no hiding. They communicate openly. They know your thoughts, and they're at a much higher evolved level than we are. And they are trying to teach us to be better people, to realize that there is no separation between us, that we are all connected, that we're all one. And that when you understand telepathy, that we're all connected, that all our minds are connected. We're all connected to source, connected to God, connected to the creator, that there is no division. We are all one, and we have to start treating each other fairly, the same as you would want yourself to be treated. See, like they're so much more advanced than us. And that's the reason why they're waiting, why they don't land the White House and make their announcement, because they're waiting for us for when we are more spiritually ready and more advanced than what we are. And that's one of the biggest things that we're trying to come across. But, getting back to my Sandia friends, they've taught me so much, and they are teaching others about telepathy. Anybody who wants to have extraterrestrial contact, I'm going to tell you exactly how you can do it, because they want to make contact. They want to make friends. If you want to have extraterrestrial, if you want to have contact with extraterrestrials, with star nations, go to officialfirstcontact.com. That's www.officialfirstcontact.com, and download the Telepathy 101 Primer. It's a free download. It's available in about 20 different languages, and it's not that long. It's actually a very easy read, very simple. Read over it well, and then practice. If you practice for about half an hour each day, for about 90 days, 100 days, you'll get better and you will have contact. But here's the catch 22. You need to practice emotional honesty. You have to practice emotional honesty with inside yourself. Because if you are practicing your telepathy, yet you're afraid to make contact with an extraterrestrial, they're not going to contact you. And the reason for that is because they have protocols, agreements that they're abided by in order to have contact with you. And those three rules are: cause no fear, do no harm, leave no trace. So they cannot break those rules. They do not want to cause you any fear. So you need to get over your fears and embrace love and get out of these lower vibrational frequencies, lower vibrational emotions of fear, of you know, loathing, of depression, of hate, of envy. Get out of those lower vibration emotions and embrace more love. Embrace that. And then you will attract what it is that you truly feel inside yourself. Like attracts like. Remember that. So if you are fearful, you're attracting fear. If you are full of love, you're going to attract that back to you. And that's how the universe works. You know, it's yin and yang. So that's how you can have, you know, you can have, you know, contact. But for me, you know, my Ponte friends, they've been working with me quite extensively, over the last several years. And, it's been getting more and more serious. So I was told about a year and a half ago, in a private, talk with Teenie, and she said, you understand and you know that music, it can be communicated on a telepathic wavelength, do you? And I was like, no, I didn't know this. And she said, yes, music can be communicated on a telepathic wavelength. And in fact, you can communicate, when you communicate the music, when you're able to do it, play music telepathically, you can actually create visual images and imagery that will actually be recorded on the actual digital recording. You can record a telepathic message in the physical recording. It's all about frequency. It's all about music. It's about feel. And I asked her, can you teach me this? Can you teach me how to play my music at a telepathic level? And she said, yes. Over the last year, some amazing things started to happen. So, it was back around March of last year. I got a message from Sue Walker, their telepath, and she said, you're on the schedule for a visit. You will know that you've been visited because there will be something that will be out of place in your apartment. And I thought, okay, let's keep an eye on this. So about 2 weeks later, it's about a Wednesday night, and I'm, you know, asleep in my bed, and I wake up to the sound of, I could hear movement down in my apartment, living room. I look downstairs and I don't see anything, and I go back to sleep. About early in the morning, I'm awoken to the feeling of liquid draining out of my left ear, and it startled me. And I scratched my ear, and I was like, "What the heck is that? Why is there liquid draining out of my ear?" I never went swimming. I thought it was just completely annoying, and it was very odd, very strange. I get up the next morning, get dressed, go to work, come home, and then I'm walking, past my couch. And then I happen to notice on the shelf, I have this little wooden statue of a guitar player. And he was facing against the wall. And I'm thinking, that's really weird. Did I drop him last night? No, I didn't drop him last night. Why is he facing the wall? Oh, my God. Maybe they came and visited. And so I get on Twitter and I start tweeting to them. And then this message comes up from Drudy, and she said, yes, got a message from one of the trainees. They said they thought that your little character, your guitar player, was strangely curious. They apologize if they did not put him back properly. And I'm like, no, that's fine. That's fine. I just realized, oh my God, I've been visited. It was so incredible. I couldn't believe it. And then my friend, Kale, who's the one who introduced me to Sandia, the next day he, messages me and he says, I was visited by Jordy last night and she was waiting for me to go to sleep because they needed to do a procedure on me to remove black goo. And I'm like, what? What do you mean a procedure? And then all of a sudden it clicked in and I started thinking, wait a second, the liquid that drained out of my ear. And then I run upstairs to my balcony, and I see right where my pillow is, I happen to notice there is this orangish, or there's this reddish brownish stain on my pillowcase. And I'm thinking, what the heck is that? That must have been the liquid that drained out of my ear. And so then I messaged my friend, and then he says, oh yes, thank you for reminding me about that. Jury told me that that was the last process of the liquid that they put inside our heads to clear us out. And when the liquid drains out, it drains out of your left ear, and that's the last part of it. I'm like, oh my God, you too? And he said, yeah. And so I was just, you know, it's one thing to get, you know, affirmation from yourself, but for somebody else to also mention it too, that was just, it was just too crazy. And then what would happen is that over the next 7 days, there was something that was taking place. My body was starting to rid itself of toxins. And my urine was just completely putrid. It smelled like ammonia. It smelled like metallic and chemicals and all this weird stuff. But then my ears were actually also a bit sensitive for 7 days. They were quite sensitive. But I felt some changes going on in my consciousness. There was something that was going on. And then on the seventh day, all of a sudden, my consciousness was activated. I was activating areas of my mind that had never been activated before. And I never realized how clouded our brains have become due to all of the poisons and toxins that are purposely put in our food and our water to turn us literally into zombies. Because they put fluoride in our water, which calcifies our pineal gland. They put other stuff in our foods so that it dumbs down our consciousness to a real cloudy state of complete blockage. So we can't access our third eye. We can't access our higher spiritual selves. And it blocks our telepathic abilities. It was an incredible feeling because I was able to actually physically focus on different areas of my mind and be able to activate them and put pressure inside my head to activate my brain. Now, about a month after they did this process, the procedure, they repeated it and did it again. Once again, I had another stain on my pillow. And then after that whole process was done, then all of a sudden I was always connected to the collective. My mind was always activated. My consciousness is completely expanded in ways that I never experienced ever before in my life. I've completely changed. And the Sandia, you know, the Ponte, they can still continue to visit me on a regular basis. Apparently my telepathic communication skills have been greatly improving. Now, what's more important than that is where things have taken to recently. And I met a girl, a new Ponte girl on Sandia Wisdom. She arrived about a year and a half ago, and her name is Thera. And she came to Earth because her expertise is in the tonal language of the cetaceans, the tonal language of the whales and the dolphins. You have to understand that the dolphins and whales have a very complex language, which is a tonal language, but it's also a telepathic language. The whales and dolphins communicate telepathically. And when they communicate, their communication is three-dimensional, and they communicate a lot in images. And Thera is here on this planet because she was being transferred to an aquatic station in New Zealand because she is here to collect the songs of the whales before the whales die, because many of the whales are dying because of the continuous radiation poisoning coming from the Fukushima disaster in Japan. The Pacific Ocean is littered with radiation. It has not stopped. They haven't done anything about it. The oceans are dying. And in addition to that, there's a lot of military sonic weapons testing that's going on. And they are deafening the whales and the dolphins. And so now you have these whales who can no longer hear each other, can no longer sing. They, out of depression, they beach themselves and they die. And so Thera is here to collect their last songs because of what we are doing to our planet. It's a very sad case. And I asked Thera, I said, can you teach me this? Can you teach me this language? And she said, yes. And so back in about April of last year, I received, they came and visited me, gave me a massive download. And this download took me about 3 days to recover from. And I know what a download feels like because they give me a lot of downloads. And a download is so exhausting that I can't stay awake at work. I literally fall asleep at my desk, or I'll be staring at my screen and I can't even think. And I need to drop into what I call a reboot nap. That's the only way to describe it. It's so exhausting. But what's happening is that there actually is a real physical neurological rewiring of the brain as it's taking in this new download information, so that my brain can process the information that's coming and the information that they are transferring to me. So she gave me this massive download, this whale download. It was the beginning course. They gave me instructions in regard to how to access this download, how to unwind it. It was basically go down to the Hamilton Harbor, to the Lake Ontario before sunset. And when the sun is setting and you have the elements of the fire and the water mixing, so you have the waves crashing and you have the fire from the sun, start playing a guitar and you'll start to unwind this tonal language, whale language, and start playing on the guitar. So it would be just before Christmas when I started feeling something different happening with my guitar playing. And I felt some changes that were going on physically inside my brain. And then I was working on a new song, and this melody was coming to me, and I decided to keep working at this melody and working at it until I played it exactly how it was coming to me, because it was coming from the edge of the black, the zone again, the creative consciousness, the collective consciousness. Once I got this melody, the demo recorded, I'm not kidding you, and I have the proof of it because I have the screenshots. I get a message from Sue Walk, and she said, "I just got a message from Teeny and Thera. Whatever you were just experimenting with what you recorded, with the length of notes, the ripple effect, the time effect, and what you were playing, you just accessed the whale download. Congratulations." And I couldn't believe it. Not only that, but they heard me telepathically playing thousands of miles away. They heard me playing my guitar telepathically thousands of miles away. But in addition to that, I was communicating something else that I would discover 2 weeks later, that would once again change my life and take things in even to a more dramatic state. So I finished the song, and the song is going to be released on my new album. The song is called Nach Waffen, which is German. And in this song, it's a melody that's being played, and it starts off very softly. Then it gets a little bit more intense, gets more intense and more intense until it's really, really intense. I finished the song, I mastered it, and I'm listening to it Christmas Eve, and I'm listening to the song over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, and when you read the Telepathy 101 Primer, you'll understand what I'm talking about. They talk about in the Telepathy 101 Primer about sudden knowings. A sudden knowing is information that comes to you instantaneously, that is information that you did not have previously, but you know with 99% certainty that it's true, that it's real, it's verifiable. I'm listening to my song, and all of a sudden, this melody that I hear, that I'm playing, da 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 da. Na, na, na. All of a sudden, I heard a translation. I heard that I was actually saying something. I was saying, "Do you hear me?" I stood up and I screamed, "Oh my God, I'm saying, do you hear me?" in a tonal language. The music is actually saying words. I could not believe it. I had tears streaming down my face for 20 minutes. I sat there in my chair and I just wept. I couldn't believe it. And I knew for 100% certainty that what I was hearing was the truth, that I was actually saying something in a tonal language. I tweeted to Sue and I said, oh my God, I'm actually saying something. I'm actually saying, do you hear me? And then she responded back, I just all of a sudden heard cheering coming from the Sandia Mountains, and they are sending the messages back to the aquatic station. So I got confirmation from Sandia. I also got confirmation from some other people who, I have extraterrestrial contacts. They listened to it and they confirmed that I was speaking in a tonal language. So you have to understand that music is actually a language, that music can be communicated in a language and speak stuff, because the whales talk in a tonal language. That was a profound change for me to actually do this. And it's not just the only whale song that I've done that is speaking in a tonal language of the whales. I wrote another song, which is actually called the whale song. And honestly, I channeled some great bard. It was a great bard that was speaking to me. I wrote the song, and it's probably the most emotionally exhausting song I've ever had to record. It took me almost a day to recover after recording this song because of how emotionally powerful it is. Whales communicate in such strong emotions. And I seriously felt it, and it just took over my entire body and took everything I had inside me to record this song. And that's going to be released on my new album. But they continue to work with me with more of these downloads, and they have more whale song or whale communication songs that they want me to work on. And that's going to be my next project. I was already given the assignment because I received another download a couple weeks ago. So they work with me and they continue to work with me. And the reason is because the way the Zetas work is they work with your natural abilities of what you do naturally, and they help enhance those abilities and tweak them to make you the best person that you are supposed to meet, you know, become the person you were always meant to be. And they come visit me. I'm visited. And the reason I know that is because Sue told me, check your bed for dirt or sand. That'll be the cue, the only knowing that you were picked up. Swear to God, every week, you know, at least one day a week, I wake up lying in sand on my bed. So I collect the sand. I got several samples. I know I'm up to about 3 or 4 dozen samples of sand that I've collected from my bed from visitations. That's how many visitations I've had in the last. So yeah, I don't call them abductions. They're more like wellness visits, and they continue to pick me up and enhance me. And I think they're enhancing, you know, activating more DNA. They're activating more for my consciousness to be able to handle more of the information that's being processed and coming through, so that I can handle more of these whale songs. Because the next assignment, I'm not going to talk about it because it's a secret. But it's crazy. It actually is equivalent to rating a Bach fugue. And if you want to know what a fugue is, go look it up on Google to find out what a fugue is. It's one of the most difficult pieces of music that one can write. And that's what I'm working on. But, you know, that pretty much sums up, you know, the majority of my story of who I am. Where I started, what I've discovered about myself, where I'm going, and my experiences, and they continue the story. You know, the story doesn't stop here, because every week I'm visited again, and there's always a new piece that comes to it. I'm hoping, you know, anybody else who wants to have contact, as I said, go to officialfirstcontact.com, download the Telepathy 101 Primer. I also encourage you to check out my music, because my music is reaching people at levels that people have never experienced before. If you go to pyramidsonmars.com, both my CDs are there. You know, my debut CD and Echo Cosmic are there. There's also links to many of my other personal radio interviews. I also have links to my guitar lessons, because I teach online guitar instructional videos that teach my style of guitar playing, which is very much influenced by neoclassical guys like Yngwie Malmsteen, but it's more influenced directly by Baroque classical composers, Bach and Vivaldi. So check out that, because there's all kinds of free trailers. You can hear all kinds of cool stuff I'm doing on guitar. Any guitar players out there who want to change up their playing and play stuff that nobody else is, check it out. I didn't mention as well, but the Ponte are not the only star nations that I've had contact with. I've had contact with Sasquatch as well. Yeah, for me it was I haven't seen them. They've played some tricks on me. You have to understand that they're really close with Sue and Otter, because Radar, his best friend, is a Sasquatch, 15-year-old Kie. And so when I first visited Sue and Otter about a year and a half ago, I was sleeping in their camper. And every time I went into the camper started to rock back and forth on its own. And I thought I was just losing my mind. I thought it was hilarious. I was also kind of frightened a bit. And then the next day when we were taking off, and then Sue jumped on Twitter. And then I said to Radar, thank you for the visit. And by the way, was that you rocking the camper last night? And his response was simply, well, I had a little hairy help. So you have to understand that the Sasquatch can also be interdimensional. So they can be there, but they'll be in a different dimension, so you can't see them. That's why they can, you know, why so many people who discover a Sasquatch footprint, they'll find only one footprint, and that's it. That's because they'll be walking interdimensionally. They'll pop out, and then they'll just, you know, pop one foot on the ground to throw people off, you know. And the reason why they're so elusive is the fact that they're a telepathic nation as well. So they know, you know, when you're in the area, and they'll telepathically read you and figure out, you know, whether you're a threat or not, and whether they need to, you know, protect their family and protect their kids, or whether you're, you know, you're a right-minded individual. But I had a visitation from a Sasquatch who literally came into my apartment about 6 weeks ago. It was wild, absolutely crazy. So it was 4:30 in the morning, and I'm lying in bed and just about to fall asleep again, when all of a sudden my brain stem activates. Now you have to understand, the Ponte have done so much work on my brain, and they actually did some work on my brain stem. And that actually was one of the hardest things. When they actually picked me up one night and were working my brainstem, it felt like I was shot with a laser gun. Like that part of your brain is really sensitive. But anyway, so it lit up, and it was almost like it was basically telling me, "You have a visitor, sir." And so then I let myself just go into a light lucid dream. So I'm in this lucid dream, and I'm lying in bed looking down, and then all of a sudden my body becomes paralyzed. I can't move. And then I feel on the right-hand side of my body, I feel this large being against me. Now, it's a good thing they were in an interdimensional state, because if they were in physical, I would have had a 500-pound Sasquatch lying on my side. It would have crushed me in my entire bed. Felt right. Him along my side. And then I felt this arm go around my back. And then this huge hand was underneath my right arm. And then I heard, telepathically in my head, I heard, that is what I heard inside my skull. And I was not afraid. I wasn't afraid at all, because I'm not afraid of you. I'm visited all the time. I've overcome fear a long time ago. And so I give my visitor a telepathic hug of light, which is what I learned from the Ponte. I give him a hug of light. And then I just slowly start coming out of this light, vivid dream, you know, lucid dream state. And then I come in, out full, and then I still feel that huge hand underneath my arm. It was still there. And I realized, oh, wow, I just got a hug from a Sasquatch. Just so amazing. But I heard him. I heard him right in my head. Like, I heard him. He was loud. Yeah, it was kind of intimidating, actually, because they have a very, very deep voice. But it was great. They basically, you know, I guess they heard a lot about me, and they wanted to check out this Kevin dude and see what he's like. So I've got I think it's really cool that I have Sasquatch friends. You know, all this dullest science fiction stuff that you see is actually based on real facts, on reality. I've learned so much in regards to the truth that's hidden in movies. Every movie that you watch, most movies that you watch, you know, they're science fiction, have a little bit of truth in them. Why do you see so many TV shows on these days which have portals? Because portals exist. I've seen portals. You know, there's portals everywhere. But, you know, all this stuff is slowly teaching people. You know, I've learned so much. You know, even Star Wars, the battle cruisers, the Star Destroyers. In my radio show, I've actually interviewed a lot of people who were part of the secret space program. Many people. And the funny, when I get them on, I get more than just one on, because they've worked together, and they'll go back and forth in regards to, you know, different things that have happened to them, and their stories coincide. But what they also mention in regards to, the fleets up there are run by a German society called Nachtwaffen, which is German for night weapons. The ships, the secret space program ships, look like black Star Destroyers. That's how they describe them, and that's Nachtwaffen. You know, night weapons. That's the name of their fleet. There's so much that people are hidden from, because they're plugged into the Matrix, and the Matrix is what they're supposed to believe in, and And they try as best they can to suppress the ET information. But the truth is out there, and we are out there spreading it and trying to get the awareness out there so people will be ready for when official first contact happens, which is in the year 2021.
Not long at all.
No, it's not. Why is it 2021? Why, people ask? Well, how do we know this is true? The Ponte have been working for this for decades, preparing people. 2021 is the year where certain treaties that were signed by Eisenhower to give Earth 50 years to prepare itself for official first contact. They were to have no official first contact for 50 years, and they had to operate in certain protocols to stay basically under the radar. Those treaties come to an end in 2021. So we're going to see there already is a huge spike in regards to mainstream media who's starting to cover more and more about ETs, about UFOs, and the anomalies, and to bring this more into the mainstream so that it's not going to be so much of a shell shock when this actually occurs, when the veil comes down. Because when the veil comes down, everything is going to change. And people are going to be asking questions. The church is going to be asked a lot of questions because they've known for a long time, but they have denied it. And now they're going to have to answer for it. That's a whole other story in its own.
Let's have you back before 2021.
Oh, for sure. Geez, in two more months, I'll have another whole show of the events that have happened to me.
That's great. We're definitely keeping contact, Kevin.
Sounds like a plan, man. But thank you for having me on the show, for sure.
Very welcome, Kevin.
Next time, folks, keep your eyes to the skies. This is Kevin Estrella from Pyramids on Mars. Check me out at pyramidsonmars.com.